Hello everybody, James here is Ask Dutch Anything, where you can ask your posers to the crappy
anything. Hey, no, but there are some questions, if they're personal, I would have to say, well, I'm going to have to refrain from answering that because...
Boxers or briefs? Is that too personal?
No, briefs.
Hmm. Oh, there you go then. Well, that's the line of personal question.
I must leave you. Can you hear that siren?
No.
No?
Oh, I did just then, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But don't worry. We won't.
You only hear it when it comes by you.
Mm. No, it's fine. Unless they're arresting you for some sort of like podcasting offense.
And what would that be?
I don't know. Podcasting without a mustache license.
What about lying during a podcast? You think that's ever been done?
On ours, do you think?
I don't think on ours.
No.
I can't remember telling a lie. Because I have a, here we go, beep, 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 beep. I have an internal monitor that says when I'm lying. So when it goes off, I stop it.
Like, what was the president that never told a lie? Is it George Washington?
No, it was...
Or Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln.
Good wrestler as well in his day, so I hear.
Yeah. I wrestled him in Springfield, Illinois, when he was just coming along. I stomped the shit out of him.
Hell of a hand, eh?
Yeah, he was a good hand, and he did a pretty good interview. And and I got him in, and I had Gorgeous Georgia with him, and Gorgeous was trying to bring him along. But, you know, sometimes you can't bring that old school influence along with you. They either have it, or they don't have it.
He had a good gimmick with the stovepipe hats as well. Very, you could pick him out in a silhouette.
That was a good gimmick. The stovepipe. You know, they could pick you out in a room anywhere. Mm. You had that big stovepipe.
Pick you out on Google Earth with that hat. It was massive.
go up about eight foot, and you could be picked out at any time in any room.
So you had to be fit. All those doorways he had to duck under.
How many questions did you get this week?
Over 100. But I haven't looked for a week and a half, so in fairness, that was it wasn't just 7 days, it was like 10 or 11 days. So, but anyway, we got quite a lot in, as per usual. And if you want to send your question and you do it via questionsfordutch@gmail.com, send it there.
Plus, I'm going to say something. This is something just a little bit odd. If you just want to contribute a little bit to the Go Feed Dutch Fund, it just, you know, dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com on
PayPal.
I'm sorry, PayPal. I mean, I'm not asking. I'm just saying you can send me some money. And you can, James, what is yours?
I'm not telling you.
Tell me.
No, because it's also linked to my personal email that I'm not giving out freely. So, no. I'm not
I will give it out.
No, you. I can edit these things.
You trusted me with your email address, didn't you?
Ah, yeah, but I didn't mean to. I meant to send it. When I initially talked to you, I meant to send it from the... Right, so there's only three people, I think. Hang on. I think like four people have got my personal email, and I always meant to do everything from a business email, and it's you, Road Dog, and a couple of other people. Yeah. And for some reason, everyone's got my personal
email. And two wrestlers eased their way in there.
Mm.
That was good.
A bit too sneaky.
So when you're cleaned out here in the next couple of weeks, you can say, well, I'll just write it down to my old Russell buds that put me in this shape. All right, give me the first question.
Well, I was going to say, yes, you and Road Dog have cleaned me out. I'll blame you two. Before we do, we've got two books each. Dutch has got two books, The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road, of course. If you want them signed, you go to dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. Make your request there. He has certificates. He has other things as well, hats. I've got two books, The Rock and Owen Hart. I've got a new podcast. It's not that new really anymore. Shane Douglas, Franchise University with Shane Douglas on all podcast platforms and on YouTube under Shane Douglas Official. And I think that's pretty much it. So we will get to the first question. And the first one is, from actually a lot of people who wrote in. So this a video came out and everyone wrote in the same day. But I've chosen this one from Rod Rose from Pikeville, Kentucky. He says, this is my first time writing into the show. First off, I want to say how much I enjoy the podcast. I never miss an episode. Well done. Anyway, I was scouring YouTube and I ran across a wrestling pay-per-view from around 2011 or 2012 that streamed on Netflix called AWE Awesome Wrestling Entertainment Night of the Legends. To my surprise, the commentary team featured Larry Zbysko, Chris Cruz, and the Dirty Dutchman himself. The main event featured a match between Ricky Morton and Kevin Nash with Ronnie Garvin, of all people, as special referee. Does Dutch remember much about the show or the bizarre main event that features a promo mid-match?
Oh, I remember the show. I had went up there to actually wrestle, and then they didn't have a commentator. And then they threw my name in there, and I said, now, if I'm commentating, I'm not going to wrestle, too, because that's two jobs. Okay, no, you just commentate. Here's your – and they got me my tux. I had a tux on. I looked very nice in a tux, by the way.
Did you? Did they provide you a tuxedo?
They did that day, yes.
Oh, very nice.
And we did, me and Larry Zbysko, did the show, and – it's hard to do shows that way, though, because they're trying to tell a story that you're not familiar with, nor are the fans in most cases. But your job is to kind of bring them into the moment. And I tried to do it as best I could, but it was a failure, I think. The pay-per-view, I mean, the matches on the pay-per-view were okay, but if we'd have had some angles that we kind of understood, but there was no way for anybody to understand any angles because they didn't have a TV, they didn't have nothing. It was one of those thrown together at the last minute type deals, but it paid good, and wrestling fans were... they'll buy it. They'll watch it. So, as a on a scale of 1 to 10, I'll give it about a 5.
It's not too bad of an experience. I've heard that promoter, whoever he was, paid really well. And when I interviewed Ricky Morton the first time, you understand what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He said that pay per view was the best payoff he ever received. It was either like $7,000 or $9,000.
Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna have to throw the flag on that one.
For a single event, that's what he claims. That's the best paying single show he ever was on.
Well, if he got it, more power to him. But
do you know?
Guess what I got paid?
$2,000.
No, less than that.
15.
Yeah.
Mm.
But that's okay just to sit up there and talk.
With a free tux.
I mean, if the people were really tuning in to see me talk, well, I'm sure the promoter would have realized that by that day. And since my name didn't go up to the day of the pay-per-view, whatever it drew wasn't up to me. But I don't know. I think you got to be careful about those pay-per-views figures.
It's funny with if there's just like a really oddball wrestling pay-per-view, you seem to be commentating on it. So we've got AWE, and then you had Heroes of Wrestling, which you also commentated on. So if you've just got an out-there wrestling pay-per-view, then just call Dutch to do the commentary on it.
Just called Dutch because we couldn't make sense of it. We damn sure know that he won't make sense of it. But he has some pretty good stories, and we'll just get it out there and let it run and see where it takes us.
Are you aware, excuse me, as a burp into the camera, are you aware of the, Kevin Nash, Ricky Morton issues, whether contrived or real, going into this pay-per-view?
What was the issue?
Well, glad you asked. So, and I'm not as glad that the answer's on the next page. Kevin Nash had said something about, I don't know, the boys in the 80s or something like that. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, Ricky Morton, this was on an RF video shoot like back in 2000 or something. And he responded to Kevin Nash as saying he didn't know anything about the business and that he couldn't draw flies in a shit factory.
Now, hey, that's pretty strong. Mm. Couldn't draw flies in a shit factory. And he directed that comment to Kevin Nash.
Yes, and then he made more pointed references to Kevin Nash throughout this RF video shoot. So it's probably the first pay-per-view ever where the main event revolved around shoot interviews. Crazy. But that was also 10 years before the pay-per-view came out as well. So there you go.
So it took 10 years for that pay-per-view to come out?
After the initial comments, yes. Also, very quickly, how did you like working with Chris Cruz and Larry Zbysko?
Eh. Chris, they're okay, but I'm saying the styles didn't match up. So all I can say was it was what it was.
That's fine.
That's most I can say.
on air. Also, does Dutch have any memories from Pikeville, Kentucky? Specifically, I know SMW came around here a few times.
Well, Pikeville, Kentucky, years ago, where they used to shoot at the ring. They would take, really, the guy would sit up there on one show, and he shot a hole through the ring.
What?
He fired a gun in the middle of the ring, and I'm sure it didn't go through because the boards are like that. But I bet if they picked that up, they could have pulled that bullet out. And yeah, they would get up there and they would get drunk in those in the stands. And if you ever been around those mountain people, they're not predictable. Thus, why would a guy just fire a gun right in the middle of the ring?
Who's in the ring, do you know? It was just empty.
I think it was an empty ring. They just had gotten out.
So not George Gulas then?
No.
No, we could understand that if George
I think it was a Smoky Mountain show.
Oh God, so it was in the 90s, crikey.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about then, if you go back past those days, when the wrestlers left the building to go home, a lot of times they would leave with a entourage of people wanting them to stop. So now if they didn't stop at the first 7-Eleven so they could get beer, they had to keep going because the people would stop, and when they went in, that's when the trouble was going to happen. So I've heard guys that they would leave Pikeville, Kentucky, and they might not stop for another 100 miles because finally the people would just turn back. So again, they believed that the things you did in that wrestling ring meant something. That you fully intended to beat the living crap out of whoever was in the ring with you. So you had to watch that because they believed it. I hate to say now, people say, why would they believe that? Well, because they would actually throw the punches and you would hit the guy's bleeding here and here. You know, you hit him on those two frontal lobes. Yeah, you could get him to bleed easy. All you had to do was get him to hold still. Say, oh, yeah. Still now. Oh, dear. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. All right, am I bleeding yet? No, let me do it again. Oh, and I got to scream. But crazy stuff.
Next question. Edmund Blackadder says, can you tell us the most and the least you ever made for wrestling a single match?
The most I ever made wrestling a single match was $5,000 in Puerto Rico. And that was the actual payoff, because I had bitched and moaned about some other payoffs I'd gotten. So they made this a big one. But the biggest payoff I ever got, I didn't wrestle. I managed my little boys, the Blue Brothers. I even forgot their names now.
Ron and Don.
Yeah, Ron and Don, but yeah, I don't know their names.
Oh,
the Blue Brothers.
Yeah, they were the Blue Brothers, Jacob and Eli Blue at the time, I think.
Jake
yeah.
and Eli Blue, right. I think I made, for WrestleMania, I don't know what it was, 10 or 11?
Wow.
I think it was $10,000.
I actually checked back
between Ron and Don. I think I made more money than they made. And they got hot as a mother hunter. I said, guys, I'm just telling you, I shouldn't tell you. You know, you get to telling what you made and they can actually see it. Because they make you say, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. Yeah. I think they made $7,500.
Each or together?
Each. Well, that was a pretty pretty good payoff in whatever it was. So if you want to look at it in today's value, it was probably close to 30 grand.
Yeah, not too far off, 25. Just because we didn't get the actual match. So you said a $5,000 payoff in PR. Do you know what year and do you know who you were wrestling?
Oh, PR. Oh, yeah. I remember. It was in 1979. It was a stadium show outside, me and Frankie Lane versus Carlitos Colon, my good buddy, and
Hurricane Castillo. I can't
Hurricane
remember.
Castillo Senior.
Yes,
that was it, and it was a 18,000 seat stadium, and they actually. It was packed, just jammed from corner all the way to the ends on both sides. And it was about 20,000 people. And then there was more people coming through the gates or coming over the outfield walls. So when you get 20,000 people literally wanting to see you die, you have to be very, very careful. And I was as careful as I could be. I think we had one match. I think it may have been a week or two after this. It sold out too. But it was a match that it was inside at the inside stadium. And we went on last. I don't know why we went on last, because usually they would put us on fourth. And I asked them one day, and I've told this story before. I said, why do you guys put on your main match, or the match that drew the people? Why do you put it on fourth? he says, well, these people have a tendency to drink, and they drink a lot. He said, so if we wait to the end of the night, they will be stone cold, staggering drunk. And he says, they're hard to control. They're hard for the police to control. So we walked out there on the floor, and I think it was the Rodriguez Stadium, the inside deal, I think it's what they called it then. We went on the floor, and it was 10 minutes before we could leave the floor to even start the way down because they hadn't cleared the way out. The fans had figured out, well, this is the way they're coming in. Let's get them on the way in. Man, they beat the living shit out of me on the way to the ring. I had a poncho, so I'd put the poncho up in a hat, but that shit was... See, the cops hated it because they get hit. They don't hit me so much as they hit the cops. So we get in the ring, and it was supposed to be a barbed wire match. The ring surrounded by barbed wire. And I always thought that was illegal in Puerto Rico. I mean, I'm not a stickler for the facts now, but it was. And they couldn't put the ring up because it was banned. So we just started fighting, and they pulled out some of the barbed wire. We never even messed with it. And we went about, I mean, the people were loud. God. So the match was over. I forgot. They won. They pinned me. You talk about guys not wanting to lose in important matches. Yeah, I wanted to lose. I wanted to lose and get it over with and get me the F out of here, please. So when it was over, we thought we were going to leave. That's the key phrase. We thought we were going to leave. But the fans had a different thought. No, we're going to delay you and try to kill you. That's what they did. So it took us at least 10 minutes to get from that ring. And it was only like, I would say it's 150 feet from to the door. Took us 10 minutes to go 150 feet. And it was fighting the whole way. And here come a punch, and I throw a punch out, and, you know, and it becomes something else. And it was rough. So we got in the back, and I laid down. I said, oh, I'm glad it's over. But then guess what? It wasn't over. They waited for us outside. And the police come up, and they said, you know, Dutch, you know, they can speak English. Hey, we don't advise you to go outside for another couple hours. Why? Well, they found out the car you guys are in, and they're trying to do all kind of stuff to your car. I said, okay. So we tried to go out probably about matches were over at 12. I think we tried to go out maybe 2:30. Because the cops finally said, screw it. I'm not on the clock no more. I'm leaving. So they took off, and here we was trying to make our way to the car. And the whole time I'd carried like a iron, like that's what they pour iron concrete around. Mm. And it was like, had little round rivets around it. But it was hard, is what I wanted. So I carried that out with me, people throwing stuff, and I'm trying to hit people, and we finally left. I got home that morning, and I lived about, I don't know, if you took a straight shot, I lived about 20 minutes from the stadium. I got in at like 4:30. Hmm. Crazy.
I've got a fun fact for you. Dutch, is that $5,000 in 1979 and $11,000 in 1995 both equal within about $20 of each other, $22,000 in today's money. So how amazing is that? I mean, that they've sort of worked out, it was almost the exact same number there. Before we get off this, Dutch, we've had the best payoffs. Aside from someone stiffing you and just not paying you, so that'd be zero, what are the minimums you have agreed to work for?
Oh, the minimums, 300, 400, 500. But to get some of that stuff, to get a $500 payoff, these guys, they're not making any money anyway. So if you take their money, they're not going to make any money. So what the wrestlers did, you know, they would take a decent payoff, save $300, $400, and then you clean up on that by running your own, you know, merchandise table. And if you don't make the 500, well, the merchandise table will help you get there. So, I mean, that's not killing anybody. It's actually, it's the market working for me and the promoter. See, I've seen guys, they just try to nickel and dime these promoters to death. Well, yeah, you got to do this, you got to do that, and I want a room, and I want it at the Hilton. I wanted to have this and that. I tell those guys, go down to the Motel 6, and that's where you were staying last year. Stay there because you had to pay for it. You do that. So, and I don't blame these guys for wanting to be treated right and paid right, but some of them are just ridiculous. Some of them are crazy.
See, that's like that's an independent thing. So $300, $400, $500. But as far as USWA, for example, when the bottom really fell out of the business and just no one was making anything, there was the much vaunted $40 a night guarantee. Did Jerry ever pay you as little as $40 a night for a match?
Well, I'm sure he has, maybe 50. I don't remember it because I'm not going to work for that. The reason I'm not going to work for that is I can't work for that. I wouldn't even pay my gas. Because, and if he said, you're here, I said, I'm not, I'd always tell him I'm not going to be there. Why not? I said, well, you don't pay enough. I said, hell, we're down to where we, and I would call around and get me another job and I'd leave. That's how it worked.
Next question. Dan from a wet, dark, and gloomy London. Hi, Dutch. Today I watched a Maven YouTube... Trust me, Manchester's just as bad at the moment. YouTube episode where he talks about Wrestler's Court. This is Maven, the first Tough Enough winner. Maven said it was you who came up with the concept. Now, we're actually going to watch the video, so why don't we see what Maven said? 1 second. Okay, here's what Maven says about... Oops, let's put the sound on that. Help. Wrestler's Court.
First, I have to let you know exactly what is Wrestler's Court, and the only way to do that is to talk about how it started. Dutch Mantel, or for newer fans of WWE, Zeb Coulter, started it years ago, back after the Bruiser Brody incident from Puerto Rico. For those of you not familiar with who Bruiser Brody was, he was a wrestler who was actually murdered in Puerto Rico after an altercation with either a booker or other wrestlers. And Dutch Mantel knew there had to be a better way for wrestlers to hash out disagreements and thus bringing forth Wrestler's Court.
Okay, right. So this is something, if true, I had no idea about, is that you invented Wrestler's Court in the wake of the Bruiser Brody murder in order to better hash out issues in the back. Is that true?
Well, no, the Bruiser Brody incident had nothing to do with Wrestler's Court, because Wrestler's Court is a tongue-in-cheek look at things if they have a disagreement backstage, because it should be funny. And if you have an issue that one guy don't want to put the other guy over, and you know, they present their case to a judge, not a jury, just to a judge, and they'll rule on it in about 30 seconds, and therefore you're stuck with it. Because I came up with Wrestler's Court because I was a big fan of Judge Judy and Judge Mullion and, you know, the judges, and they were good. So that's what we based it on. And you, once a judge ruled, it's over. You can't go back and go for a retrial.
What were the punishments for The Undertaker for romancing the ladies and turning up 4 seconds late? What were the punishments you'd give him?
Oh, he'd have to drive for a week or two.
You never drove anyway.
Well, I didn't drive anyway. But he never accepted the findings of the court, because I convicted him every week. We'd be on a trip to Louisville, and I say, okay, wrestler's court, ding, 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 ding. And whoever's in the car, you know, I said, here's the defendant number one. And I just call it out, Mark Calloway. He's been convicted or charged with romancing the rats. See, if you romance the rats, that's, if you're too good to them, they said, you know, you'll ruin the rats for everybody else. And see, and the rats, I never really called them the rats, because I didn't want to degrade them like that. So I always called them little ladies of the matches, is what I call them. And then we would put him on trial, and he would try to do his own defense, which didn't work. Then I'd say, ding, and I'd hit the table. Okay, I've come to a verdict about 30 seconds into it, and that he is guilty as charged. Pay the court fees. Court fees would be about $50. I never got anything for that. But the best wrestler's court, when you got several people together on a team against this one guy, so they could all testify against him. And we've had that. It was like a kangaroo court, kind of. Because I never remember the defendant winning anything. We always hung him with the charge, and you're guilty as charged. And
you're a hanging judge.
I was a hanging judge. I hung them all. So,
hang them high. We will move on. DS, hey Dutch, what did you think of Terrence Taylor, aka Terry Taylor, in the Ort Foundation in WCW? I personally think that was a great character for him, coming to the ring in a suit and looking very confident in himself and his abilities. After the horrible Red Rooster gimmick, also the York Foundation was underrated stable with the talent they had. What are your thoughts on the group? Do you remember the York Foundation with Alexandra York, a.k.a.?
Well, they could have done something with it had they concentrated on it, but they didn't really concentrate on it. So if they'd have taken Terry Taylor and pushed him, like he is different from all the rest of them, and then take one of those underneath guys and him and the girl, they beat the crap out of them. Then they disappear for 2 weeks and come back. Now they got an issue. So, but as it was, they didn't have any patience. And patience is everything. Unless you have patience, you're just going to get a couple matches, you beat a guy up, and the guy comes back to get a comeback, and it never really works out the way you want it.
I like that. Terrence Taylor, the computerized man of the 90s. So the best I remember it was Terry Runnels was the manager, and like apparently she put into a computer the opponent's strength and weaknesses, and the computer would come up with an answer of how to defeat said wrestler. And the answer always seemed to be, this is the computer speaking, pick me up and bash me over the head of your opponent. And that seemed to be the finish every single time. And then
it probably worked.
Yeah, it worked every time. If they didn't get caught, it was great. As far as that, it was an awful faction. I was like, crap. Michael Wall Street, Richard Morton. It's like, here's something I want to mention to you.
Richard Morphin?
Morton.
Morphine?
Not morphine, Morton, Ricky.
Ricky Morton.
Yeah, it's Ricky Morton. But this is one of his brief heel runs.
Yeah.
Which also, I saw a video with you recently where, like, an unshaved Ricky Morton is a bad guy with you. And you're a bad guy team in, like, Continental or something like that.
Memphis, I think.
Is that Memphis?
I remember that.
The other people...
It didn't last long.
Why not?
Because it was the shits. That's one reason. So if you see yourself in a situation where there's not much upside to it, cut the cord early. Go do something else. Go actually get a job. That might have helped. But sometimes in some of these wrestling companies, they just know there's no hope for them.
A couple more people who are in. So Alexandra York, Michael Wall Street, Terrence Taylor, Richard Morton, Thomas Rich, and Mr. Hughes. Curtis Hughes. I mean, I've interviewed most of these people, quite frankly. Do you know, Curtis Hughes really surprised me as an interviewee. He was really good. He was full of personality. He was great.
Yeah, he was good and good in the ring.
I think you're right. He's a bit underrated, especially as a super heavyweight, and he moved really well. And surprisingly, he got his start in Kansas City with Bob Geigel, apparently.
And how long did he stay with that?
Not long. Who's waving at you?
Oh, my wife.
Yeah, he didn't stay there long, and then he got into WCW. Any stories about Mr. Curtis Hughes?
Brother, he could stink a plane up.
Go on.
We got on there, and we were way in the back. Like, just, you know, you got your first class, then you got your business class, then a smaller class, and then you got your third class, I guess.
Scum class.
Well, it was three seats on one side and three seats on the other, I guess. Brother, he cut one. And it took its time and it worked its way back. You know, by the time it got to the second or third seat, you'd hear like, Jesus. Jesus Christ, who did that? Oh, my God. And we're sitting there, and I think it's me and Ricky. And we're sitting like this, like, oh, God, it's coming. And it kept coming about halfway down. Oh, my God, who did that? Who's this? Because we knew probably who did it. And then it finally worked its way about 10 seconds back to us. It was God-awful. Oh, and finally... That's when we did have a wrestler's court the next week. and he had to suffer.
What was his sentence, do you remember? Like a court?
I think he walking. That would have been a good sentence for him.
Ah, dearie me. Apparently also was the guy who could sleep anywhere. So yes. I hear.
But I think that was from a... I think he had a vitamin deficiency.
Like sleep apnea thing or something.
He could have had sleep apnea too because he could go to sleep immediately.
Who's ringing you? It better not be Curtis Hughes ringing you.
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's my daughter.
Should we move on then? Let's just move on to the next question.
Move on.
Timmy from Long Island. Who were the wrestlers who preferred hard weighing for blood back in the day? What's the best way to hard weigh if you don't have something sharp to hand?
Gun.
Mm.
That's the best way. We didn't do hard weighs back then.
No?
No. I'm a guy born to do it. He could, but very few, let me just say it this way. I never volunteered my ass to get hard way. No, because they're going to hard way. They're going to hit you right on that eye with the right hand over your left eye. And when they hit that orbital bone, I guess. It's supposed to cut the skin and you start, open you right up. Some guys could do it right away. Other guys couldn't. So,
who were the best at getting hard way blood if needed?
We didn't do it that much, but probably, I remember Tom Ernesto, he was the old school guy. He could get it. And then if you got it before the match, see, I worked this angle one time and I said, I want us to come to the ring, and we started having words. And I said, I want him to punch me and bring juice right away. And he said, well, people are going to see you go down and do something. I said, no, we'll hard way it. So they never see it. And they didn't. Because you get it bleeding right here. Maybe a line about that far. Then you new skin it. You know what new skin is.
Mm-hmm. It's like a liquid kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it binds it together. So you don't really see it. And then when he comes to the center of the ring, he hits me and all of a sudden it's gone. And you think, damn, he knocked the shit out of him and opened him up. So we did that a couple of times. It worked like a charm. Because you cannot tell that it is that the guy did it to himself.
So the trick is, as you were saying, so it's sort of like downward stroke on the ridge of the brow, yeah. Essentially.
Okay, anybody that's thinking about doing this, get your little brother. Take him back in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Say, close your eyes, and he'll close his eyes. And you want that thing just like that. And you want to take your knuckle and come down on it, on the edge. And that will open the skin up. So that's the way it's done.
Next.
Now you don't want to get one that keeps punching you.
So you've got like a great big egg on your face.
Bam, yeah. I didn't get it yet. Bam, bam. You said, God damn, get it. You're beating the shit out of me. But most of them could get it like first once or twice, and then it'd be ready. Then you take it, put your finger over it, hold it. And you know where they got this idea for getting the blood this way?
No, we know that we've said this one before, boxing.
Boxing. You know if a guy gets cut, put your finger there. And you stop it. Okay, got it. So if they're thinking, well, if you can stop it, be easy to bring it on. That's where they got it, where the blade come from.
Next question. Larry Baker, long-time listener, but first time writing in. I'm curious to know some stories about Jeff Jarrett's mother, Christine Jarrett, as one of the few women promoters. Stories from Jim Cornette and others tell of a woman diminutive in stature, but would take no guff from anybody. What are your interactions with Christine?
Yeah, she was like, I like Miss Christine. Smart woman. And she had to battle all these men all the time. Because women promoters, you would have one guy trying to talk down to her, and she wouldn't take it. So she would tell all the wrestlers, this is the way it's going to be, and you either do it or you're not going to work here. And she more or less, nobody really, I never saw anybody stand up to her. Oh, she wouldn't allow that. She worked in the office, and what was that lady's name? I mean, Teeny was Jeff Jarrett's grandmother. She was the mother of Jerry, and she never allowed any of them to talk down to her. And I don't see why somebody would want to talk down to her anyway, because she was always, to me, a very nice lady. And And she had some other woman, I can't remember her name, who used to travel with her every night. And they would handle the money. Now, you got to think about this. They were leaving the arena with sometimes a lot of money, cash money, in their hand. I never really thought about it till about, I don't know, 5 years ago. But I'm thinking, well, I bet they had a lot of ideas about robbing those women. But they never were robbed. So, and she had Nashville, she had Evansville and Louisville. Those were her towns, and sometimes she would have Lexington, Kentucky. And she would do very, very well. So if you went to her with a problem, or it's always been my experience with her, when you went to her with a problem, she would listen to you and she'd actually do something about it. You would actually, if you had a problem, if you go to her instead of going to Jerry, it had a much more chance of going through. But she did prove a point that she knew what she was doing. And she would stop a lot of activities between the wrestlers and the young females. Oh, my God, don't let her catch you with a young female. Oh, she would raise hell. And rightfully so, because they have come in and arrested guys about things that she had told them specifically not to mess with these girls.
With that being, actually, weirdly, that just so happens to be the next question I'm going to ask, but I'll just stick with Christine for a minute longer, is how did she get into wrestling, and was she involved with wrestling before Jerry?
She was involved with wrestling before Jerry because she had a job working for the old-time Nashville promoter. I can't remember his name. But when Nick bought him out and took over the territory, she came along with it. So that's how she ended up on the scene. And she ended up on the scene because Jerry bought out Nick Gulas later on.
I'm just trying to look.
She was working for Nick Gulas. And then when they did the move in Memphis, when they went on their own in Memphis, they wanted to go on their own in Nashville and Louisville and Evansville. And they did. And Jerry, he installed his mother as a home promoter. And they ran it that way for years and years and years.
I don't know if this is right. John Cazana?
John Cassana was Knoxville.
Yes.
And we didn't have anything. Jerry didn't want to have anything to do with that. Because I think he wanted too much for it, or he still wanted to have the his hand in the business. So if you're going to buy something, run it. Don't buy something and let the old bosses still run it. Because then they know where all the ways to skim money is. So, but he did get Lexington, Kentucky, which was a great, great town. They had a 22,000 seat basketball stadium at the University of Kentucky. And they'd sell it out for a basketball game, 22,000 people. So, but when we ran it for wrestling, we'd only run half of it. But they'd be over 10, 11, 12,000 people there.
Next question. Name unknown. How many guys got into trouble over underage females or aggressive females at the matches or at hotels where wrestlers stayed?
When did you ask that question?
Because you sent this to me months ago as a question someone sent to you, and you said it was a great question to ask, and I just got round to it.
It is. Yeah, the underage girls around any type of wrestling endeavor creates a problem. Because you know as well as I do, some of these 16-year-old girls, they don't look 16. They look 20. They look more sometimes. So I'm going to give you an example. We was in Evansville, Indiana one night, and we stopped at a little 7-Eleven outside town. I went in and got me a Coke or whatever I got, or a hot dog or whatever. And I came out, and Chris Champion, who's passed away, by the way, he was leaning up on the trunk of a car, and I'm watching him, and he's kissing this girl. And it looked like pretty deep, passionate kisses. So he got in the car, and the first thing I said to him, "Chris, how's the girl?" "She's 19. I said, "Bullshit. That girl's not 19. "Oh, yeah, she is." I said, "No. You need to check, see if she's 19, I'm telling you. Because something told me that there was something about that girl and Chris that was maybe wouldn't be nice." And about 3 or 4 weeks later, the police came into the dressing room and they wanted Chris Champion, and they arrested him on the spot and took him out. Of course, I knew what it was about. I didn't tell him anything, but I did. I said, "Well, I tried to tell you, you know, you can't." And I was a lot older than Chris there. I think Chris was like, I don't know, I think he was like 24, maybe 25.
What year are we thinking here? Like 1990 or something?
I think before that.
Okay.
But they took him to court and sentenced him to a prison stay. Can you tell what he got?
Well, I can tell he was born in 61. So in 1990. I didn't realize he was English. Well, there you go. He was 29 in 1990, so you can work it back from there. I can't find the prison thing at the moment, but no. But yeah, old enough to know better, certainly.
No kidding. And there was another one with Kenny Wayne.
Yeah.
But I don't think he molested any kids, but he had it all on his computer. And he went to jail for 3 or 4 years. But knowing some things like I know, there are some people who barely missed going to jail. And the reason that they didn't go to jail was because they paid off the girls. So I'm thinking, what is wrong with these guys?
Well,
you know something? One thing I never, I could see a pretty female at the matches, but I never let looks get in the way of any of my ideas. I just wanted to check her credit content. I wanted to check her credit card rating and see if I want to have anything to do with her. Now, that's a joke, but these guys need to learn. And anybody that's listening in, if you go to a little town, there's always some girl running around who's going to like you. Make sure that she is of age. And don't be a complete damn asshole. Use your head a little bit. Because what they're going to do, they're going to try to wrap you up. And then all of a sudden, you're nailed with not only a lawyer fee, buddy, you may end up with a damn prison stay.
The two people you mentioned before, and Ken Wayne, yes, arrested for indecent imagery on his computer. And he's 64 now. He got 20 years for that. With Chris Champion, however, the only information, very briefly, that I can find, and I'm pretty sure it's a joke, is that Chris Champion spent the night in jail last week after allegedly trying to molest an 11-year-old girl while wearing his Ninja Turtle outfit.
Yeah, that's a joke.
So,
I'll find it.
Yeah.
I can find it.
We've got one more question. I can talk about... I'll tell you what, I'll give you three different ones. In fact, no, I won't. I'm going to give you this one. Shane Taylor. When you room with The Undertaker, what was he like as a tenant? Was he sloppy, clean, left hairs in the sink, never cooked? Let us know and love the show.
No, Undertaker was fine. He didn't leave a mess. No mess more than I left. You know, he was friendly. He was funny. He was obliging. He was. It's not like everything is going to be my way, or it wasn't like that. And I helped him with his training a little bit, as most as I could, but he was already working then. He wasn't a pig. He wasn't a slob.
We can't end on that one because it was only like a 30-second answer. We'll end on one more then. Which one is Tim here from Lizard Lick, the apex of civilization?
Lizard Lick, Kentucky.
Yes. The only thing I know is Lizard Lick Towing, which was a show that we ended up getting at one point. One thing I seem to see more of is wrestlers.
We had Lizard Lick.
Lizard Lick Towing. It was like a towing company.
But we had them one time.
Show. You had
them? Yeah, I know that. No, I thought you said.
No, we had the show. We had the show over here.
Oh, okay.
We got it. One thing I seem to see more of is wrestlers complaining that they are being held down. I can understand complaining if the champ is holding the book, but other than that, it seems to make sense that anyone would want to stay on top for the money, merchandising, and potential outside benefits for as long as you could. I've seen some names mentioned more than once, but I'd like to know if this is a widespread problem or just sour grapes. If it's an issue, what talents were the worst about stifling competition? Thanks in advance. So basically, it's almost a two-pronged question here. So which wrestlers would complain the most about being held down, and which wrestlers would hold talent down the most?
Well, you can always hear, well, they held me back there. They held you back from what? I mean, did they give you even a shot at all and saw how you were going to do? You never hear that. But yeah, they were guys held down and not giving. And what they're saying is that the main event would be somebody like Jerry Lawler versus somebody, where it should have been in the guy's head, a babyface versus this other heel. So, but Lawler ends up getting the money. And rightfully so, I think, in a lot of cases, because he was like the top babyface. Same deal may have worked in Florida when Dusty held that top spot for so long. He held down the other talent, or the top talent, but he didn't give them a chance to really show what he could do or what they could do. But Lawler and Dusty weren't stupid. They knew if they held them down, just revise your payoff routine. Pay him more for being in the spot. And it's not like you're charging somebody else. He's charging you. That money that you pay them is just coming off the other guys. See, if I had a graph up in front of me, you could see what I'm talking about. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I understand exactly what you're talking about. I've got a name I've written down here that I seem to remember as one of those people who would say that he was always held down. But can you, before I give you this name, can you think of anybody who would always make that complaint whether it's true or not.
I don't know.
I've got one name here. Brickhouse Brown.
He wasn't held down. He was actually pushed beyond his potential. And what it was, I don't think you could draw a cartoon figure with him, really. If you took a 7-Eleven, I mean, a Marquee,
Sharpie,
you couldn't draw, you couldn't draw a stick figure with whatever Brickhouse Brown could draw. I got in a ring with him one night, and when I was working with Snowman, Snowman was over, big time over. And guess how many matches, how many holes he knew?
Probably like two.
Zero, probably. But I didn't give a shit how many holes he knew. All he had to know was two, a headlock and a punch. I'm going to do the rest of it. So when you go to a town and the Snowman's on top and the little town does like $7,000 or $8,000, well, where did that money come from? Brickhouse, you were on the card, but you was like third match. And you look at where the other guy was against me. He was up there. We had worked an angle. But I have worked some matches with Brickhouse. He was literally lost. I got some heat on him one night, and I told him, okay, block the punch, make a comeback. Well, he blocked the punch and hit me, then stood there. I said, block it again and hit me. Did it again. Block it again and hit me. Man. But this time the people going down every time. I said, make a goddamn comeback. Why don't you? Please do something. And he finally made it, and he pissed me off. By then, I cut him off. Oh, see, if you don't know enough to do your own work, you don't need a chance to be the main event guy. So what towns did he say he was cheated on?
I don't know. I remember something. I think we may have brought it up on a podcast ages ago, where he was something that was like, that Dutch Mantel booked me wrong, or someone booked him wrong, or something like that. And
yeah,
he never made it to the WWF, really, and that kind of thing.
What's that tell you? Hey, don't blame me. If you don't make it to the WWF, you blame me?
I never made it to the WWF, and I blame you, Dutch.
Well, I could have had something to do with it. But... you know, hey, I'm going to tell everybody now that's training to be a wrestler, go out there and take control of your own destiny. Go out there. If the people are popping, you're doing something right. And if they're popping, get them to where they're not popping anymore, then go back and look at what you've done. Don't mean you've done it all right, but you did learn something. So I hope you can learn that and take it and use it to get you where you want to get.
On that note, we are going to shut down this podcast. As I said at the beginning, questions4dutch@gmail.com. Email your questions in there. And as I always say, for goodness sake, so many of you are. We can't get to every question, of course, but we do our best. So for now, thank you very much for watching. We'll see you again.
When are we going for our live podcast?
Well, it was going to be today.
Really? What happened? Is it too
early
in the day?
No, we both got sick. And also, you need to have like over more than 24 hours notice to activate it.
Oh.
So, I don't know, maybe Thursday as we record this.
Be fine. Let's advertise it a little bit.
Okay, I'll work it out.
Okay, man.
All right, dude. Listen, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again whenever we're out next. You know what the score is. And Dutch, we the people.